Colin Fairfax stood there studying the hoof prints that had been left in the sandy soil beside a stream. Fairfax was almost certain that they were on the right trail, but the possibility that they had gone astray still nagged at him. He should have had an actual tracker with him. When he was the most experienced frontiersman in the group, that was a definite problem.
That's still them, right?
Of course.
How far behind them are we?
We're closing in on them. I expect we'll catch up to them either late this afternoon or sometime tomorrow morning. Yeah!
What do we do after Preacher's dead?
Didn't Beaumont give you any orders?
Nope. Just said to do what you told us to do.
I'd like to go back to the valley and burn that trading post to the ground.
Why? Hart seemed like decent fellas, and that Deborah Hart, well, she's a mighty pretty woman.
They ruined my plans, just like Preacher did.
I gotta admit, it'd be mighty nice to spend some time with that woman, away from her husband. Maybe we could kill Corliss and Jerome and burn the place down, then take her with us when we left.
We shall see.
Fairfax did not like the idea of taking that woman along. That would just cause jealousy amongst the men, which might lead to more problems. But he was perfectly willing to dangle Deborah Hart in front of him as bait to get him to follow orders. In fact, he'd go one step farther than that.
There are other women in the settlement, too. I'm sure some of them are attractive. We might be able to take several of them with us as well.
It took longer to reach the plains than Laura thought it would. By the middle of the afternoon, they were still winding through the foothills with their Blackfoot escort. She still had mixed emotions about the situation. She didn't trust the engines not to turn on them, but at the same time, she did not look forward to her and Clyde being alone with Flag and his squaw.
Won't be much longer now. The trail drops down to the prairie just on the other side of that gap.
Flag, walks like a bear's not going to double-cross us here at the last minute, is he?
I don't think so. If old Bear's got one failing, it's that he's a man of his word. But if you ever run into him after we part company with him today, you better kill him and kill him quick. Because he'll be doing his damnedest to kill you.
I'll keep that in mind.
It seemed clear to Preacher that the best way to get the prisoners away from the Blackfoot was to take them by surprise. Nothing would be quite as surprising to the Injuns as to find their pursuers in front of them instead of behind. Uncle Dan agreed when Preacher laid out the plan during another brief halt to rest the horses.
If they was white men and we had the drop on them, they'd do what you told them to keep from getting killed. You can't count on Injuns being that reasonable, though. They're liable to put up a fight, no matter what the odds are against them.
If they make a move to kill the prisoners, we'll just have to shoot fast and straight.
Yep, let's do it.
The rescue party pushed on, urging their mounts on to greater speed as they circled to the north. Horses and men responded gamely. They were all worn out from the long chase, but now, with the end in sight, they found fresh bursts of strength and energy. By the middle of the afternoon, Preacher was confident that he and his companions had gotten ahead of the Blackfoot. They cut sharply to the south and reached the ridge that divided the foothills from the prairie. As they reached that notch, they angled down the eastern slope and dismounted. The ridge itself would keep the engines from being able to see their horses. One man was left behind to hold the mounts, while the others spread out on both sides of the gap and found hiding places among the rocks. Preacher chose a spot very near the notch for himself. Dog sat beside him. Preacher sleeved sweat from his forehead with his good arm. Quiet lay over the landscape now. So, the big cur at his feet heard the hoofbeats too.
Hush, dog.
Judging distance by the sounds of the horse's hooves, Preacher waited with the patience of a born frontiersman. He knew that his men would stay concealed behind the rocks until they heard his voice. This had to be timed carefully. Since he couldn't handle a rifle, he wanted the lead riders to be within range of his pistol when he finally stepped out into the open and challenged them. At last, they were close enough, he figured. Preacher looped his thumb over the hammer of the flintlock pistol. Took a long step into the middle of the gap, lifting the pistol and turning to face the oncoming riders as he did so.
Hold it!
Preacher's keen eyes swept over the scene, taking in the tiniest detail, since this was the first close look he had gotten at the group he and his companions had been pursuing.
9 Blackfoot warriors glared at him, including one barrel-chested fellow whose war paint and regalia marked him as a chief. Each of the Indians had one of those new rifles. Laura Mallory and her brother Clyde rode in the forefront of the group, along with another white man in a beaded buckskin jacket and a flat-crowned hat. Preacher had never seen him before.
Preacher! Oh, thank God you found us!
Preacher kept the Indians covered with the pistol, and he knew that Uncle Dan and the rest of the men hidden in the rocks had their rifles trained on the Blackfoot as well. The members of the rescue party had been told to show themselves just enough so that the Indians would know they were there.
Laura, you and Clyde, come on over here.
Mallory's face was flushed with surprise.
I told you Preacher would come rescue us, Clyde.
Yes, yes you did.
Laura dug her heels into her pony's flanks and rode forward. Mallory followed her. Preacher stepped aside so that they could move past him through the gap.
Keep going when you get to the other side. Who's that other fellow?
That's Mr. Flagg. He helped us. He's a prisoner too. You have to save him.
Flagg, get away from those redskins.
Flagg started his horse forward, but at that moment Preacher noticed something he should have seen earlier. Flagg was armed. He had a pistol behind his belt and a rifle in a beaded sling on his horse. And he wasn't the only one. Clyde Mallory had a pistol, too.
Don't move, Preacher. I don't want to kill you, old boy, but I will if I have to.
Son of a bitch!
Preacher, what the hell's going on here? You want us to open up on them Indians?
Hold your fire!
Preacher had no doubt that his men could bring down some of the war party survivors, but those Blackfoot weren't going to just sit there. They'd fight back, and if enough lead started flying around, Laura Mallory might be hit. Besides, he didn't know yet if she was aware of her brother's treachery or if she was just as surprised as he was. It was important to him that he find that out.
I'm sorry, Preacher. When I heard about how badly you were hurt, I never dreamed that you would come after us.
You're part of it. You knew about those rifles your brother brought out and sold to the Indians.
Figured that out, did you? Well, you've got part of it wrong. We didn't sell the rifles to Chief Walks Like a Bear and his men. We gave the weapons to them.
Why the hell would you do anything
like... Because this country shouldn't belong to you. England colonized America, and when we tried to take it back, you filthy barbarians killed our father. Tell him, Laura.
It's true, Preacher. Our father was a soldier. He was killed at the Battle of New Orleans.
A cold shiver went down Preacher's spine at those words. He had been at the Battle of New Orleans. He had taken part in the fighting, despite being little more than a boy at the time. Even though it was mighty far-fetched to think about it, he couldn't rule out the possibility that it had been a ball from his own rifle that had ended the life of Clyde and Laura's father. He didn't figure it'd be a good idea to bring that up right now, though. Not with the look of murderous hatred that was already etched on Clyde Mallory's face.
So, what are we going to do about this?
What do you think we're going to do? Your men are going to let us go, and you're coming with us as a hostage to ensure our safe passage back to the wagon train. Meanwhile, the chief and his men will be allowed to leave in peace.
Clyde's voice was loud enough in the hot silence that hung over the landscape that the men hidden in the rocks could hear everything he said.
Preacher, that ain't gonna work! Too many of our fellas lost loved ones back yonder at the settlement. They ain't letting those redskins ride away.
You heard what the man said. Only one way this standoff's gonna end, and that's with powder smoke in the air.
Then I might as well go ahead and blow your brains out right now.
No, there must be some way we can work this out.
I fear that too much blood has been shed for that to happen, my dear.
Hold on! My squaw and me don't have any part in this fight. Let us ride away from here, and then you can all kill each other as far as I'm concerned.
No part in it, huh? Yeah, I reckon you'd be the one who put Mallory in touch with the Blackfoot, mister. That's the only thing that makes sense. They wouldn't have those rifles if it wasn't for you.
I've heard a lot about you, Preacher. Nobody ever told me you were too damn smart for your own good.
A moment of strained silence went by. There was no way of knowing how long this impasse was going to last. But then, Chief Walks Like a Bear reached the end of his patience. The ball shot past Preacher's head and slammed into the chest of Clyde Mallory's horse. The animal reared up on its hind legs just as Mallory pulled the trigger of his pistol. The men from the settlement opened fire.
Shots roared out from the rifles wielded by the engines. Preacher swung his pistol toward Walks Like a Bear, right as he was struck from behind by Clyde Mallory. As Preacher slammed into the ground, the Brit's arms looped around his neck and clamped down on it like an iron bar.
You bastard! Get off me, you filthy cur!
Half blinded with pain, Preacher staggered to his feet. Blackfoot Chief sent his horse surging forward. He swung the empty rifle at Preacher's head. Preacher ducked under the slash and blow, but he couldn't avoid the horse's shoulder. It clipped him as Walks Like a Bear charged past and started up into the notch. Chief was suddenly jolted by two direct rifle hits, but he stayed on his pony's back. He tossed his empty rifle aside, plucked his tomahawk from his belt, and sent his horse lunging up into the rocks. Walks Like a Bear leapt off and landed in the middle of the Van Gorts. The chief grappled with the two Dutchmen, and they all fell out of sight behind the boulder. The other surviving Blackfoot had reached the slope too, and they were now struggling hand to hand with the men from the settlement, who didn't have time to reload their rifles anymore. The fight was fierce, but the engines were outnumbered. Preacher shoved the terrible pain in his arm aside and looked for Laura Mallory. He couldn't find her in the confusion. Dust swirled up, making it harder to see. The man called Flag burst out of the chaos, still mounted, and kicked Preacher in the chest. Preacher went over backward, but he dropped his pistol and managed to snag Flag's leg as the man went past. Preacher bent and snatched up his pistol again. He pressed the barrel to Flag's head.
Don't move, you son of a bitch. You ain't got the upper hand just yet, Preacher.
Preacher didn't have to ask what the renegade meant by that. The unmistakable sensation of a razor-edged knife suddenly pressed against his throat. The blade penetrated, and blood crawled warmly over his skin.
Drop your pistol, Preacher. I don't want to cut your throat, but make no mistake. I will if I have to.
You can't cut my throat fast enough to keep me from blowing Flag's brains out, Laura.
Perhaps not, but you'll still be dead, won't you? I truly wish things hadn't turned out this way, you know.
Preacher didn't give a good goddamn about what she wished or didn't wish anymore. His gaze darted around the slope, what he could see of it from where he was. Preacher saw Clyde Mallory struggling to his feet, bleeding in several places from the gashes dog's teeth had left in his flesh. Preacher's heart stopped for a second when he saw the shaggy shape lying on the ground at Mallory's feet. Dog wasn't moving. Preacher saw Uncle Dan and Pete Sanderson farther up the slope, both of them bloody from hand-to-hand struggles with the Blackfoot, but apparently not too badly hurt. Walks Like a Bear and the two Van Gorts lay in a gory tangle among the boulders. The chief had buried his tomahawk in the skull of one of the Dutchmen, cleaving bone and brains. The other brother had a knife sunk in his chest, but he had died with his hands locked around Walks Like a Bear's throat. Chief's eyes stared sightlessly, the life choked out of him. Three more of the men from the settlement were still alive, including Sanderson's friend Dennison. From what Preacher could see, none of the Blackfoot were. There weren't any loaded guns among the survivors, though. They had expended their shots during the battle and hadn't had a chance to reload.
You men stay back! I'll kill Preacher if you come a step closer!
What do you want us to do, Preacher? That English gal sure looks like she means what she says.
I certainly do mean it. I've got nothing left to lose.
Well, I'm getting a mite tired of being shaved like this.
Preacher took the pistol away from Flag's head and turned the weapon so that he gripped it by the barrel. Flag reached up and snatched the pistol away from Preacher. Laura kept the knife at Preacher's throat as he straightened.
Hey, damn it, I done what you wanted.
Yes, but I'm afraid I don't trust you, Preacher. You have a way of showing up where you're least expected and doing the most amazing things.
Clyde Mallory limped over to him, blood staining his trousers where Dog had gnawed on his leg.
By all means, go ahead and cut his throat, Laura. We can't leave him alive.
If you don't want to kill him, Miss Mallory, just step away from him. I'll take care of it.
If you pull that trigger, mister, It's the only shot you'll get. There are five of us, not even counting Preacher, and only three of you folks.
All your redskin helpers are dead. Might as well give up.
Oh, shut up, you bloody American! We still have the upper hand here.
Yeah, well, I don't feel like standing around jawing all day. I reckon the best thing is for you folks to go your way, and we'll go ours.
Preacher, no! We can't let them go! Not after what they did to the settlement!
Blackfoot are all dead! We came after them in the first place to rescue Miss Mallory and her brother, and it's mighty clear now that they never needed rescuing.
I don't care what you say. We can't let them go, Preacher. Those Injuns never would have attacked the settlement if they hadn't been able to get the guns from the Englishers. And that bastard Flag helped set up the deal.
That's mighty big talk for a man whose rifle is empty. God damn it now! Everybody just settle down! There don't have to be no more killing!
That's where you're wrong, Preacher. The killing's not over yet.
Despite the knife at his throat, Preacher tipped his head back and gazed up at the top of the ridge. Colin Fairfax, a coonskin cap on his bald head, stood there pointing a rifle at him. Behind Fairfax were at least a half a dozen heavily armed men, and more were crowding into sight with each passing second.
You still have to die, Preacher.
After everything that had happened, Colin Fairfax could scarcely believe that his luck had finally changed. He and his followers had heard the shots and circled around the battle, not knowing what they would find. Fairfax expected to discover that Preacher had somehow emerged triumphant from the fight, as he always seemed to. But that hadn't turned out to be the case. Now Fairfax once again had the drop on Preacher. This time, the hated mountain man was already badly injured. Not only that, Preacher had a knife at his throat as well, and his friends obviously held empty guns, or else this stalemate wouldn't have come about. The pretty blind holding the knife must be the woman Preacher had tried to rescue from the Blackfoot, and clearly, she hadn't needed rescuing at all.
Why don't you just step away from him, ma'am? My men and I will take care of this now.
Who are you, sir?
My name is Colin Fairfax. I have a score to settle with Preacher here. It appears that you and your companions do, too.
Step away from him, Laura. We don't have anything to worry about now.
Laura lowered the knife, leaving behind a tendril of blood that trickled down Preacher's neck like a crimson snake. With a worried look on her face, she moved over to her brother's side.
I don't like this, Clyde. We don't know these men. We don't know what they'll do.
I don't think we have anything to worry about.
Sherwood stepped up beside Fairfax.
Are you going to go ahead and shoot Preacher?
Not yet. Take him all prisoner. Tie him up.
Are you sure, boss? I really think you ought to go ahead and shoot him.
Blast it! I gave you an order. Now carry it out.
All right. Boys, you heard the man. Let's take him.
The men from the settlement clearly wanted to fight back, but menaced by a dozen guns as they were, they would have been throwing away their lives. Fairfax and his men descended the ridge and lashed their hands behind their backs with rawhide thongs. They left Preacher for last. Following Fairfax's instructions, three men, in addition to himself, kept their rifles trained on the mountain man. Then three more men moved in with a rope. Since Preacher's broken left arm was already lashed to his side, Fairfax's men wrapped the rope around his torso and bound his right arm to his side as well. That was the easiest way to make sure he couldn't fight back. They took several turns with the rope and then tied it tightly. Then, and only then, did Fairfax lower his rifle and signal to his men to do likewise.
At last. You'll never ruin my plans again, you bastard.
I won't need to. I reckon you'll find a way to do that yourself, Fairfax.
Silence! What's wrong with you, woman? You were ready to cut his throat, but you don't like it when somebody else hurts him?
I was trying to save our lives. You're just being vicious.
Believe me, he's got it coming.
Fairfax pistol-whipped Preacher in the face. Blood dripped from Preacher's mouth as he looked up at Fairfax and somehow managed to grin.
You got the upper hand right now, mister. But it may not always be that way.
Your threats don't worry me. Not anymore. Put him with the others.
A couple of the men grabbed Preacher's arms and hauled him to his feet.
Fairfax turned to the woman and the other two men.
Now, what are we gonna do with you?
I can make it worth your while to escort us farther east and help us find a wagon train on its way back to St. Louis.
You can you?
That's right. My name is Clyde Mallory. My sister and I are agents of the British government.
You're spies?
Nothing quite so crass. We represent the interests of the British Empire.
I don't give a damn about politics or empires. I just came out here to see to it that Preacher dies.
And you can accomplish that goal whenever it suits your fancy. He and his friends are completely in your power. Once you've disposed of them, there'll be nothing stopping you from accepting my proposition.
You know what, mister? I think we can come to an arrangement. But we can't settle anything until Preacher's dead.
Indeed. The sooner the better.
No, not quite. What I've got in mind is going to take some time. But we have plenty of it. Yes, we have plenty of time for Preacher to die.
Preacher knew good and well that Fairfax intended to torture him before killing him. That suspicion was confirmed as the afternoon wore on and evening approached. Fairfax had declared that they would camp for the night on the eastern side of the notch, at the base of the trail leading down to the prairie, and he ordered that a fire be built there.
A good hot fire.
The son of a bitch was going to burn Preacher at the stake. Preacher sat cross-legged on the ground with the other prisoners. Laura, her brother, and Flag were sitting together on the other side of the camp, talking quietly. Several times, Preacher had seen Laura steal and furtive glances at him. Even though she had been prepared to kill him herself if she had to, he could tell that she wasn't happy about the way things had turned out since Fairfax's arrival. As Fairfax's men heaped wood on the fire and the flames began to leap even higher and brighter, Fairfax came across the camp to stand in front of Preacher. He had an ugly grin on his face.
You're blocking the view, shithead. I was looking at the sunset.
It's the last one you'll ever see. Do you know what's gonna happen to you?
To tell you the truth, I don't give much of a good goddamn.
But what do you give a good goddamn about?
Well, I'm a mite curious.
Curious? About what?
Well, for a while, people kept trying to kill me. Two men bushwhacked me whilst I was working my trap lines. A couple of days later, three more varmints tried to crush me in a rock slide they started. Were those fellas working for you?
I don't see what harm it could do to tell you. Yes, they worked for me. For what it's worth, though, they weren't supposed to kill you. They were scouts. They were just supposed to locate you and then send word back to me and the rest of the men.
Reckon they must have got carried away. Maybe they figured they'd earn a bonus if they killed me for you.
The heavy-jawed man who seemed to be Fairfax's second-in-command had walked up in time to hear Preacher's speculation.
There's a bonus, all right. $500 for the man who kills you, according to our boss back in St. Louis.
Well, damn, Fairfax. I thought you was the boss. Reckon I was wrong.
I'm in charge of this group. What I say goes.
Well, sure. I didn't mean anything else.
Have I indulged your curiosity enough, Preacher?
Not quite. You were trying to trick me when you and the rest of your bunch left the valley where the settlement's located, weren't you? You doubled back after a couple of days after you made me think you were gone.
I didn't just try to trick you, Preacher. I did trick you. I never left the valley.
Then that fella I saw in the beaver hat?
Wasn't me. I traded hats with one of my men. They lured you away, and I went to the settlement.
Didn't Corliss or Jerome recognize you from that dust-up last year?
I was careful not to let either of them see me. I planned to kidnap Deborah Hart and use her as bait to lure you into a trap.
You'd do that, huh?
Of course I would, if it helped me get what I want.
You're lowered in a snake's belly, Fairfax.
Your insults mean nothing to me. My plan would have worked, too, if not for that Indian attack. That almost ruined everything.
You didn't have anything to do with it?
Of course not. That was their doing, those two British spies and their henchmen. All I wanted to do was kill you, not destroy the trading post in the settlement. Although, now that I've thought about it, that's not a bad idea. A certain someone in St. Louis would be quite happy to see the Harts put out of business.
There it was again. mention of some mysterious person in St. Louis who seemed to be pulling the strings on Fairfax's vengeance quest. Preacher wondered if the same fella had been responsible for Fairfax and his partner trying to stop Corliss and Jerome from ever establishing the trading post in the first place. It sure seemed possible. Fairfax was a vicious little worm, but he didn't strike Preacher as any sort of mastermind.
You attack that settlement, you'll be sorry. Those folks are plenty tough. They've proved it more than once.
Yes, but they won't be expecting trouble. Sherwood's been there too. In fact, the Harts are expecting him to return with a large group of trappers. As long as I'm not with them, my men will be welcomed with open arms. And then, once they're inside, they'll strike and take the stockade. They'll control the food, and they'll be able to starve out any of the settlers who are too stubborn to leave. Once they're finally gone, we'll burn the trading post to the ground and everything else in the settlement, too.
Clyde Mallory had been watching Fairfax intently from the other side of the fire. Now he stood up, circled the blaze, and came toward him.
Do you mean that about destroying the settlement, Mr. Fairfax?
You're damn right I do. I've got a score to settle with Corliss and Jerome Hart, too. Maybe not as big as the one I have against Preacher. But I want those bastards to pay for the part they played in killing my friend Skyler and ruining all our plans.
Very well, then. You can forget about taking us to the wagon train. We'll return to the settlement with you. Its destruction was our goal all along.
Will that king of yours be willing to pay for that, too?
I'll see to it that you're properly compensated.
We've got a deal, then. But Preacher dies first.
Of course.
Fairfax leered at Preacher again.
All this talk got me distracted. I came over here to ask you if you know what's gonna happen to you, Mountain Man.
Yeah, I got a pretty good idea what you think you're gonna do. You plan on burning me at the stake.
Not exactly. Although it's true that I want to hear you beg for your life as your skin blackens and cracks and curls away from your body. I want to hear you scream as the flesh melts right off your bones.
Don't hold your breath waiting. That ain't gonna happen.
Don't be so sure. They say that fire does terrible things to a man.
Preacher just looked up at him stonily. He was not gonna give Fairfax the satisfaction of showing any reaction, now or later, no matter what happened.
More wood on the fire! Build it up! I'm not gonna burn you with a stake, Preacher. When that fire's big enough, I'm gonna have my men throw you in like a piece of garbage.
Fairfax stalked away. Uncle Dan, tied hand and foot like the others, was sitting fairly close to Preacher.
That fella's plumb loco.
Yeah, hate'll do that to a man.
Soon, night settled her full mantle over the land. Utter darkness surrounded the area lit up by the fire. If not for the blaze, Preacher knew he would have been able to see millions of stars floating up in the prairie sky. Laura Mallory stood up. As she started around the fire, her brother caught hold of her wrist.
Where are you going?
I want to talk to Preacher.
I am not sure that's a good idea.
Really, Clyde, what can he do? He's tied up. He's badly hurt. It's probably all he can manage to stay conscious. I really don't think he's much of a threat anymore.
All right. Just be careful. Injured or not, I still don't trust him.
Laura came over and knelt in front of Preacher. She gave Uncle Dan a meaningful look, and the old-timer began to scoot away, giving the two of them a little privacy. Of course, he couldn't go very far, but Preacher supposed it was the thought that counted.
I'm sorry things have turned out this way.
Wasn't long ago you were holding a knife to my throat.
Yes, I know. And I would have done what I threatened to do. That was in the heat of battle. And what we are, who we are, makes us enemies, Preacher. But that doesn't mean I want to see that horrible little man take his revenge on you.
Yeah, he is a horrible little man. I reckon we agree on that much anyway.
I'd like to think that if things had been different, then you and I, well, what was between us might have been different too.
Well, ain't it pretty to think so?
But that can never be. You're like a knight from England's olden days. A true warrior. A man like you should die in battle, not being burned alive to satisfy the sadistic whim of a madman.
I couldn't agree with you more on that one.
Laura! For God's sake, don't get so close to him! I told you we can't trust him!
For God's sake yourself, Clyde! Can't you see that Preacher's no threat to anyone so long as he's trussed up like that? I'm sorry, Preacher. Goodbye.
So long, ma'am.
Laura crossed her arms over her chest and walked away. Mallory got up and followed her to the edge of the circle of light cast by the fire. Preacher was glad that she had come over to bid farewell to him. He agreed, like she said, if only things had been different. But they weren't, and they never would be. There could never be anything between them, except for the gratitude that Preacher felt toward her at this moment. Gratitude for the knife that she had slipped under his thigh when she put her hand on the ground. The knife that was now within reach of his bound right hand. He got his fingers on the hilt, worked the blade around so that it was behind his arm where no one could see it, and then he started sawing at the rope that was wrapped around him.
Well, I'll be. The gal gave you a knife, didn't she?
Yeah, I plan on giving him a little tussle before I cross the divide, if I just got the time to saw through here.
If you get loose, you reckon you could maybe flip that knife over here without anybody noticing?
Yeah. I'd be more than happy to give it a try.
Preacher kept sawing at the rope, feeling the strands part one by one. He thought that if he gave a good heave on it, he might be able to break the rope already. And it looked like things might have to come to that. Like Uncle Dan wasn't going to have a chance to free himself after all, because Fairfax was coming toward him again. And from the look of gleeful, evil anticipation on the man's ugly face, the time had come.
Well, well, well. I think a fire is big enough and hot enough now. Once your friends have watched you die, Preacher, we'll dispose of them as well. I'm not without mercy, though. They'll be shot, so they'll die quickly. Unlike you.
Sherwood stepped up behind the man.
Hold on just a minute.
What the hell do you want, Sherwood? It's time at last for Preacher to die.
Yeah, that's true. But before he does, I reckon you ought to die first, boss.
The long blade of the knife Sherwood held went into Fairfax's back. It went all the way to the hilt, skewering Fairfax like a bug.
Why? Why?
You don't think Shad ever trusted a fool like you to get anything done, do you? He let you think you were in charge, but told me to get rid of you when I thought the time was right. Well, time's right, you stupid bastard. We don't need you anymore. Matter of fact, I don't reckon we ever really did.
Fairfax, say howdy to the devil for me when you get to hell.
Sorry, Preacher. I know you would have liked to kill him yourself, but I didn't see any way to work that without letting you loose. And I'm not that big of a fool. You're still gonna die, just not in the fire.
What have you done, Sherwood? I had an arrangement with Fairfax.
Now you've got the same deal with me, only better. Because Fairfax would have found some way to ruin everything. I don't reckon he ever carried out a plan in his life without messing it up somehow.
I heard you mention someone named Shad. Were you talking about Shadrach Beaumont?
Shadrach? Hey, I never knew what his real name was. I just knew him as Shad. But, yeah, Beaumont's the one I'm talking about. It was at his house in St. Louis a couple of months ago that I saw you, mister. I was discussing some other business with him when you got there. Shad told me to step out of the room while he talked to you, but I heard the whole thing. I heard you and him setting up the deal for those rifles.
I'm not going to confirm or deny anything.
You don't have to. I saw you, Mallory. I got a good look at you, and I saw that sister of yours, too, waiting in the buggy outside. I ain't likely to forget a lady as pretty as her.
Leave my sister out of this.
Why? She's working for that king of yours, too, ain't she? You're both part of that deal you set up with Shad. I'm not sure why he's working with a couple of Englishers, but that's his business, not mine. All I want to know is if you'll pay me to see to it that the Hart's trading post and settlement is wiped out, just like you were going to pay Fairfax.
Why not?
You're right. Fairfax was positively obsessed with Preacher. The man was insane. Utterly undependable.
Now you're catching on. You'll be a heap better off working with me.
Sherwood turned toward Preacher and reached for the pistol stuck behind his belt.
Hold on, I don't understand. Why did this fella Beaumont send Fairfax out here to kill me? I never even met Beaumont.
What does it matter? You're about to die.
Yeah, well, ain't that a good reason to tell me?
The way I understand it, Shad wanted to establish a trading post out here himself. So he sent Fairfax and a man named Mims to try to stop them from even getting where they were going. But that didn't work out, and Mims died.
I knew about that. I figured Fairfax was dead too.
No, he made it back to St. Louis somehow on his own. I'm surprised he made it. By all rights, he should have been killed in the first mile or two. So it was too late for Shad to stop the Harts from starting the trading post, but he could still take over the fur trade out here by getting rid of him. Shad knew you'd be a thorn in his side, Preacher. So he sent us up to help Fairfax kill you, which is what Fairfax wanted in the first place. At the same time, Shad made the deal with Mr. Mallory here to wipe out the settlement. I guess he figured that once it was gone, he could send his own men in to run the fur operation.
That fur business is going to be British.
I reckon that'll have to be hashed out later. But I wouldn't be so sure about that, mister.
What you mean is that your Mr. Beaumont would have betrayed us.
You said it, lady, not me. I don't know what would have happened, but I do know Shad Beaumont is a man who gets what he wants.
So why should we trust you now?
What other choice do you have? You can go off on your own and try to find those wagons of yours before the Cheyenne find you, I reckon. You might wish you hadn't, though. The Cheyenne may not hate white men as much as the Blackfoot do, but they'll still...
Sherwood staggered backward, pawing at the shaft of the arrow that had come out of the darkness surrounding the fire and lodged in his throat. Preacher had taken advantage of the confrontation between Sherwood and Mallory to flip the knife behind Uncle Dan, using only his fingers to do so. Watching from the corner of his eye, he had seen the old-timer stretch his bound arms, and he hoped that Uncle Dan had been able to get his hands on the knife. As soon as he saw the arrow strike Sherwood, Preacher flexed his right arm and shoulder and pulled on the rope as hard as he could.
Look out! Preacher's loose!
The hired killers who had been with Fairfax and Sherwood had other things to worry about besides Preacher, though. The glare from the huge fire had ruined any night vision they might have had. Preacher had kept his eyes slitted as much as possible so he could still see some. He hoped that Uncle Dan, Sanderson, and the other three men from the settlement had done likewise.
Cut the others loose and get out of here!
Preacher lunged around the blaze toward the suddenly terrified Laura Mallory. Laura lurched to her feet as she saw Preacher coming. Her hand plucked a small pistol from somewhere in the folds of her skirt. Clearly uncertain what to do, she didn't raise the gun.
Come on, we gotta get out of the light!
Escaping into the darkness was their only hope. Preacher didn't know how many Cheyenne warriors were out there. Could be only a half dozen or so, or there might be a large war party. But he knew they were Cheyenne because he recognized the marking and fletching on the arrow that killed Sherwood. The other thing he knew for sure was that the fire had drawn. Just one more instance of Fairfax letting his hatred blind him to the fact that he was a damn fool. The Indians had slipped up close to the camp, seen white men walking around making perfect targets of themselves in the firelight, and naturally they hadn't been able to resist the temptation. The timing had been good, too. The arrow couldn't have picked a more fitting moment to strike Sherwood in the throat.
Laura, run!
Preacher long-legged it into the darkness. He didn't know where Clyde, Mallory, and Flag got to, and he didn't particularly care what happened to him. He wanted to see about Uncle Dan and the others, though, so when he reached some good-sized rocks, he drew Laura behind one of them.
Stay here!
Preacher, you can't leave me here!
I'll be right back. You keep down. Cheyenne won't find you.
As he ran back toward the fire, Preacher saw that the combat had become hand-to-hand. Uncle Dan had succeeded in freeing himself and his nephew, and he and Pete Sanderson were struggling against the Indians, along with the members of Fairfax's party who were still alive.
Preacher reached down and snatched the rifle from the ground as he ran into the camp. The hammer was down on the lock, and he assumed it had already been fired. Even if it hadn't, he couldn't cock it with one hand, so he swung it like a club. Preacher dropped the rifle and grabbed a knife that was sheathed at the Cheyenne's waist. He had just spotted a warrior about to send an arrow into the body of the helpless denizen, who was still tied near the fire. Preacher raced over, yanked the knife out of the Cheyenne's back, and knelt beside Denison. Cutting his bonds, Preacher pressed the knife into his hand.
Cut the others loose!
Bodies lay scattered around the fire. White men with arrows sticking out of their bodies or heads cleft by tomahawks. Red men with holes blown in them by rifles and pistols. Only three of the Cheyenne were still on their feet now, struggling with Uncle Dan, Sanderson, and one of Fairfax's men. Preacher did not see Mallory Flagg or Flagg Squaw. The last remaining member of Fairfax's party went down with a Cheyenne knife in his chest. Preacher grabbed a burning brand from the fire. He ran towards the triumphant Indian. Preacher then went to the aid of Uncle Dan, who'd been retreating before a fierce rush from one of the warriors. Preacher crashed into the Cheyenne's back. The Cheyenne twisted and knocked Preacher off of him. Uncle Dan swooped in with a knife and drove it into the Injun's back. That left Pete Sanderson. The burly mountain man had his hands wrapped around the throat of the final Cheyenne warrior.
Damn it, damn it! I got this redskin son of a bitch right where I want him.
The next second, though, the Injun brought a knife up from seemingly nowhere and drove the blade into Sanderson's belly.
You bastard!
With his last ounce of will, Sanderson snapped the Injun's neck. Both men slumped over in death.
Oh, Lord! Pete!
Preacher looked on grimly as the old-timer cradled Sanderson's head on his lap. He left the old man to his grief and picked up a pistol as he turned away. A quick check told him it was still loaded. Denison and the other two men from the settlement were the only ones left alive here, other than the grief-stricken Uncle Dan.
Gather up all the rifles you can and get them reloaded, just in case there's any more Injuns out there.
Denison nodded. Preacher thought it likely that the war party had numbered only a dozen or so, and all of them were dead. But he didn't want to bet anybody's life on that assumption. Preacher loped off toward the rocks where he had left Laura. He had already been gone longer than he'd intended. Laura was not alone, though. Her brother and Flag had found her. They stood over her as she sat with her back against one of the rocks. And as they heard Preacher come up, they turned to face him. Each man held a rifle, and they brought the muzzles to bear on Preacher.
I dare say you're the luckiest man alive, Preacher. But it appears your luck has finally run out.
Clyde, no, there's no reason.
There's every reason in the world. Do you think Preacher will let us go, knowing what he knows about us?
Ain't much chance of that. A lot of good folks died back yonder at the settlement because of you, Mallory. There's gotta be justice for that.
Justice? Justice? You call it justice that you upstart Americans, you filthy rabble, thumb your noses at the greatest empire in the history of the world? You call it justice when a good man, our father, dies trying to teach you a lesson?
I ain't here to argue about what happened all those years ago. I'm just saying you've got to answer for the harm you've done.
For Christ's sake, shoot him! Willow will be back with the horses any minute now. Don't give him a chance to call his friends.
You're right. We can't afford to waste any more time.
No!
Laura lurched up off the ground. She grabbed the rifle barrel and forced it down. The Preacher was moving at the same time, darting to his right and raising the pistol. Flag toppled onto his side and didn't move again.
No!
Mallory knocked Laura aside and lunged at Preacher. Preacher ducked under the sweeping blow and tackled Mallory. Mallory grabbed hold of Preacher's broken arm and twisted. The pain was so intense, Preacher almost passed out. Mallory wrapped both hands around Preacher's throat.
This is for my father, you bastard! Die! Die!
Preacher knew from the dead weight of him that Mallory had been shot. He saw the blood stain on the back of the Englishman's shirt. Wearily, Preacher pushed himself up and looked around, expecting to see Uncle Dan, Dennison, or one of the other men from the settlement. Instead, he saw Laura Mallory standing there with the still-smoking pistol in her hand and an agonized expression on her face.
I couldn't let him.
Preacher rose to his feet.
Laura, it's all right. You done the right thing.
No.
Laura's knees buckled, and Preacher caught her as she fell, not even feeling the pain from his broken arm or any of his other injuries anymore.
Laura? What?
Then Preacher's hand moved to her back and found the broken shaft of the arrow. She'd been hit as they were fleeing the battle, and she had never said a word.
There's been enough killing. Enough dying. Preacher.
Preacher squeezed his eyes shut, and he held Laura. The men from the settlement found them there like that a few minutes later. They didn't say anything. They just stood there with their rifles ready in their hands in case more hell broke loose. But for once, it didn't. And the night grew quiet as Preacher stood there holding the lifeless body of Laura Mallory.
We're two of a kind, ain't we, old fella? Beat all the way to hell and back, but we still alive and kicking somehow.
The big cur licked Preacher's hand. Mallory hadn't killed Dog after all, just knocked him senseless for a while. Dog had recovered and come into camp while Uncle Dan was resetting and resplinting Preacher's broken arm.
Try not to get it busted again before it heals this time, you hear?
Yeah, I'll try. And Dan, I'm sorry about Pete.
He was a good boy. A mite ornery at times, but, hell, ain't we all?
It had taken all night to patch up everybody's wounds and tend to the burying. Now Preacher checked the cinches on Horse's saddle, since he hadn't fastened them himself. Uncle Dan had done that. Preacher nodded in satisfaction.
Much obliged.
You're welcome. You sure you ain't coming back to the settlement with us?
Nope. I'm heading east. I got something to do. You fellas tell Corliss and Jerome and the rest of them what happened. Tell them I'll be back through these parts one of these days, good Lord willing.
All right, if you're sure.
I've never been more sure of anything in my life.
Dagnabbit, hold on! I'm coming with you!
No, I didn't ask for no company.
Hell, I know you didn't, but you can't even saddle a horse by yourself with that busted wing. Somebody's got to look after you till it heals up, and I just done elected myself to the job. Anyway, I got to go back home and tell the folks there about what happened to Pete.
Well, I reckon me and Dog and Hoss can use a company after all.
The two men rode away a few minutes later, not looking back. They headed east across the trackless prairie. There were no trails and damn few landmarks, but that didn't really matter. They were frontiersmen. They knew where they were going.
St. Louis, eh? That's where we'll find that varmint Beaumont, ain't it? None of this mess would have happened if he hadn't made a devil's bargain with them Englishers.
Yeah, that's right. I thought it might be a good idea to look him up and have a word or two with him.
Yeah, a word or two. I figured to say a few things to the gent myself. I got a score of my own to settle.
Preacher nodded. With her last breath, Laura Mallory had said that there had been enough killing. Preacher knew that wasn't true. There hadn't been enough killing. No, not yet. Not as long as Shad Beaumont was still alive. First Mountain Man 15, Preacher's Pursuit, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2009, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2009,
The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Andy Clements, Peter Stray, Elizabeth Jernigan, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, Eric Messner, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Ken Jackson, Johann Detweiler, Terrence Aceford, Kate Torrey, Dylan Lynch, and Bobby Aceford. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Musical score composed and performed by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Preacher's Pursuit, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, and Eagle series, all available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other Graphic Audio titles. We appreciate it.
The Demon Dactyl came awake. It didn't seem such a momentous thing, just a gradual stirring in a deep cave in a far, empty mountain. An unnoticed event, seen by none save the caveworms and those few insomniacs among the bevy of weary bats hanging from the high ceiling. But the demon spirit had awakened, had come back from its long dormancy into the statue-like form it had left behind after its last visit to the world called Corona. The tangible, corporeal body felt good to the wandering spirit. The dactyl could feel its blood, hot blood, coursing through its wings and mighty legs, could feel the twitching of its mighty muscles. Its eyes flickered open, but saw only blackness, for the form, left standing in magical stasis in the deep cave, head bowed and wings wrapped tightly about its torso, had been covered by magma. Most of the fiery stuff of that time long past had bubbled and flowed away from the cavern, but enough had remained to harden about the dactyl's corporeal form. The spirit had come back to Corona, encased in obsidian. The demon's spirit felt deep within itself, summoned its powers, both physical and magical. By sheer will and brute strength, the dactyl flexed its wings. A thin crack ran down the center of the obsidian sarcophagus. The dactyl flexed again. It stretched its great wings out to the side, clawed tips grasping and rending the air. The dactyl threw back its head and opened wide its mouth. It voiced the sheer joy of its return, the anticipation of the chaos it would bring again to the quiet human kingdoms of Corona. Its torso resembled that of a tall, slender man, shaped and lined by corded strands of taut muscle and sporting a pair of tremendous bat-like wings, 20 feet across when fully extended, and with strength enough to lift a full-grown bull in swift flight. Its head, too, was somewhat human, except more angular, with a narrow jaw and pointed chin. The dactyl's ears were pointed as well, poking up about the demon creature's thin tuft of black hair. Neither did that hair hide the creature's horns, thumb-sized and curling in toward each other at the top of the demon's brow. The texture of its skin was rough and thick, an armored hide, reddish in hue and shiny, as if lit by its own inner glow. Shining, too, were the demon's eyes. Pools of liquid black at most times, but shifting to fiery red orbs, living flames when the demon was agitated. A glow of absolute hatred. The creature flexed and stretched, extended its wings to their full glory, reached and clawed at the air with its human-like arms. The demon extended its fingernails, transformed them into hooked claws, and grew its teeth. Two pointed canines extending down over its bottom lip. Every part of the demon was a weapon, devastating and deadly. And yet, this demon's real strength lay in its mind and its purpose. The tempter of souls, the twister of hearts, the maker of lies.
How long has it been? How many decades, centuries have passed since my last visit to Corona?
The creature remembered that long ago time now, savored the thoughts of the streaming blood as army after army had joined in delicious, desperate battle.
Selden and Actinomium.
He saw again the elf who had rallied the humans and the other elves, Terran and Denonial, who chased the Dactyl's armies back to the base of the mountain, Ada. Denonial himself had come into this cave after the beast, had skewered the Dactyl. Yet even in its death throes, the Dactyl had won the day, using its willpower to bring up the magma from the bowels of Ada. Denonial and much of his army had been consumed and destroyed.
I am eternal. I have returned. My physical wounds healed. What man, what elf will take Denonial's place?
Its thoughts turned from its enemies to those it would summon as minions. What creatures could the Dactyl gather this time to wage its war?
The goblins, certainly, full of anger and greed, delighting in murder and war.
The Formorian giants of the mountains, few in number, but each with the strength of a dozen men, and a hide too thick and tough for a dagger to puncture. And the Powries, yes, the Powries. The cunning, warlike dwarves of the Julianthes, the Weathered Isles, who hate the humans above all others.
A line of drool hung low from the Dactyl's mouth, as it considered its former and future allies, its army of woe.
I will bring them into my fold. Tribe by tribe, race by race, growing as the night grows when the sun touches the western horizon. Hear me, Corona. Your twilight is at hand. I am awake!
Graphic Audio proudly presents R.A. Salvatore's epic saga, The Demon Wars, coming soon.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.